Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest Fantasy Fix podcast, we will discuss the Open Championship, golf's oldest major. Welcome back to the Golf Digest Fantasy Fix podcast. I'm Alex Myers, and as always, I'm joined by Joel Beal, although today Joel is actually on the road, literally on the road, driving to a bachelor party in Cincinnati, Ohio. Lovely Cincinnati, Ohio, we may add. Joel, how you doing?
It's not lovely right now. I've been driving through 7 hours of rain today. So we're almost there. It's, you know, I can kind of see the sun at the end, and let's just make sure I don't make sure I get there without crashing. So there's been a few close calls with semis and the guardrail, but so far so good.
Nice. Good to hear. Well, yeah, hopefully you won't get into an accident or get a ticket during this podcast. But, you know, this is important stuff. We have to call you for this. We have reached the British Open or the Open Championship or the Open. Some people get very touchy about this. I know the tournament itself likes to be called the Open, so maybe we'll stick to that, although it's tough to get out of that British Open habit. But anyway, the rain that you brought up is probably fitting because, you know, it is an open and we'll probably get some rain. We'll probably get a lot of wind in England and at Royal Birkdale, which is hosting its first Open Championship since 2008 when Padraig Harrington won. Took out a spirited run by Greg Norman that year, who was 53 years old, actually had the 54-hole lead. Joel, what do you know about the course going in, and how does it shape who you're looking at this week?
It doesn't have a lot of prestige around it. It definitely has a nice litany of past winners, but in terms of the actual course itself, it's a nice venue, but compared to other courses over in the UK and Scotland, it's very flat around the fairways. So because of that, I think it gets a little bit of a knock. If you look at some of the past winners, there are really good iron players. The short game doesn't really come into play as other courses, especially a place like Muirfield or Carnoustie. So I think it gets a little bit knocked. That doesn't necessarily take a player's entire game into the equation. But yeah, it's still, you know, like you mentioned, Harrington played, dominant here. I think that's actually a really good litmus to what to expect this time, because again, at that time, you know, Harrington was one of the top four or five iron players in the world. So I think when we're making our picks, I think you're going to see that kind of come through in the selections that these guys, most of our picks will be really good at the approach game.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. You mentioned kind of the flatness. So it's funny you say that, because I believe it was Justin Rose who was saying that this is actually the fairest links test that they play an open on. And I don't know, I kind of like that. I know it's part of the charm of this tournament and some of the, you know, the old links courses, getting the quirky bounces here and there. But if I was playing for one of the biggest tournaments in the world, arguably the biggest tournament in the world, I wouldn't want my tournament fate, resting on a bad bounce off the fairway. So I kind of like you don't have to worry about that as much here versus a Royal St. George's where it's just mound after mound. You know, it's going to be definitely a very different test than what we recently saw at Erin Hills for the U.S. Open, where you had the widest fairways maybe in major championship history. It's going to be tighter fairways, smaller greens, and as you mentioned, that's going to put a premium on iron play. So, again, yeah, I agree. I think you're going to see that represented in both of our picks. But I'm just excited to get, you know, to another major. Obviously, we're halfway through the major calendar. We've already had, obviously, Sergio Garcia win the Masters, Brooks Koepka win the U.S. Open. I'm just wondering, Joel, what do you expect, I guess, for the rest of the season as this kind of kicks off the latter half of this stretch run that we have in golf?
Well, at least the thing that kind of sticks out to me is, yeah, we have big name winners in Sergio and Koepka, at least household names in that regard. But if you really look at the top four or five guys, you know, Dustin Johnson obviously missed the Masters and missed the weekend at Erin Hills. Justin Spieth had a nice couple days, at least a nice Friday, Saturday at the Masters, nowhere to be found on Sunday. Rory McIlroy has been MIA. I mean, he had that nice backdoor at Augusta, but missed the cut as well. Jason Day, another guy who, you know, for a lot of the big names in golf haven't been there in the first two majors. To me, I'm really excited to see if they show up, or if they don't, who's going to be that, you know, kind of secondary guy who takes over. One guy who really pops out at me is Justin Rose. And I think he's being mentioned in a lot of places as a favorite, not only because, you know, of the UK heritage, but this is obviously the site of his kind of breakout in 98.
Sure.
It really intrigues me, though, because he doesn't have a very good track record at this tournament. He only has, I think, two or three top tens. I think he's got five missed cuts. So I'm really interested at least to see what you kind of decide in your picks, because for the first time in a while, I think this is about as wide open as an open as you'll see. And you mentioned that earlier, the weather, more than any other major, it kind of throws this things into chaos. It's not necessarily always the best player. It's what time did you tee off at?
Yeah.
I think that kind of, it's, you know, the RNA guys and the people overseas, they hate when you say it, because they think we're kind of knocking the tournament a little bit, but it really is what it is. If you look at some of the past winners, it's not necessarily the best guys in golf. I mean, yes, Stenson last year we got lucky with, but before that, Zach Johnson was kind of nowhere on the map when he won, when he won at St. Andrews. Guys like Ernie Els, Darren Clark, it's just a bizarre tournament to cover, which I think honestly makes it one of the best feeders in golf.
Well, and I know you're working on a story about how older players can contend at this tournament. And obviously I already mentioned Greg Norman, what he did in 2008, but I guess what about it makes that the case as well?
And there's a few factors. One, it's by far the shortest of venues. Not only because, a lot of these courses are landlocked, but you don't need to be a power hitter. You can hit the ball 270 and it's going to get 20 or 30 yards of roll. It's more of, you know, a finesse game compared to the U.S. Open that continues, you know, the tees keep going back and back every year we get there. Even Augusta lengthens every year. The PGA Championship venues keep getting longer and longer. That, you don't really see that the case here. Also, it's in terms of just a course setup, it's a different animal. It really is more about shot making. And not only that, it's over, at least in the States, so many courses now are really predicated off of keeping the ball in the air. You have to really bump it and run it at a lot of these courses. And that's just a facet most guys don't have anymore. And it's not necessarily that they lack creativity. It's just that the way the equipment's built, they don't really need to. Whereas you have guys who grew up playing that type of style of play, someone like Els, a guy like even Zach Johnson, they're used to having that type of tool in their bag. They're used to it. Granted, you know, it doesn't necessarily always manifest. Someone like Rory, who might be one of the worst, you know, bump and run guys in the game. Obviously, he has an open title under his belt. But I think if you kind of look at that, it kind of helps spur why these older guys have done well compared to at least other majors.
Yeah, well, you already mentioned Justin Rose. Obviously, in 1998, he was 17 years old. He was an amateur, and Marco Miro won that year. But Justin Rose was the breakout star. He had that hole-out birdie on 18, finished T4. You know, and you mentioned, though, it's kind of crazy. That's actually still his best finish in this tournament to date. So, you know, a lot of people are going to be targeting him. But you're right. That's very odd stat that player of his caliber, U.S. Open champ, a runner-up at the Masters, obviously, this year, has never really thrown himself back into contention since he was 17 years old. So we'll have to look out for that. All right, well, let's move on to the picks, I guess. That's what all the many people listening are waiting for. Joel, I'll let you kick it off. Who's kind of your top guy that you're looking at going into this week?
For me, it's Louis Oosthuizen, who hasn't really done a lot this year, at least across the board. Hasn't played much, honestly. But this is a guy who has played well at the Survey. Not only does he have, a Claire Jug on his resume, but just, you know, missed another one in 2015. He's a guy who doesn't do anything necessarily spectacular. I know everyone falls in love with his swing, but if you look at his stats, he's pretty pedestrian in some of the bigger categories that we like to expect, expect performance from. That being said, his overall game is very sound. He doesn't really have any weak points. If you look at some of the past scores here, they have been higher than past open venues. I think that actually favors into Oosthuizen's corner. More importantly, if there is bad weather, you know, the early forecast doesn't really have a lot of rain in it. That can change pretty quickly over in Southport. That being said, it does look like there's going to be a lot of wind. Husazen does play extremely well in those conditions. So I think he's a guy, even though he's in a middle tier range, at least in terms of daily format, cost, salary cap, I think Husazen is a guy that at least deserves one of your five lineup spots.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. I remember I had a nice little bet on him at St. Andrews, and I was kind of pulling for him, but he didn't come through. But, yeah, certainly Louis definitely is going to be on the list of many guys. I'm going to start it off with a pretty obvious pick. I hate to steal it from you, is Jordan Spieth. I mean, you know, I think we're setting up for another one of his runs. He had the period where he was struggling with the putter. He switched out his old putter for one tournament, realized how dumb that was, kind of went back to it, won the Travelers Championship after a nice final round at Erin Hills that kind of, he said, kind of got him going. But, you know, we're talking about iron play here. And Jordan Spieth, you know, who has always been viewed as kind of this scrappy guy who somehow finds a way to score, he is leading the tour in strokes gained approach to green. He's fourth in greens in regulation. You can make a case that he is the best iron player in pro golf today. And I just like how this course is set up for him. It's not going to be a bomb and gouge type of course. Again, it's going to be a strategic layout. Someone like Spieth laying back, relying on your irons, relying on your mid irons, your long irons even for approach shots to the green. I think that really plays into his favor. I really like Jordan Spieth this week. I think he deserves to be the favorite instead of Dustin Johnson.
And speaking to your early point about putting, if anyone has any concerns about his short game, the Open Championship courses, the greens are extremely slow compared to not only other major tournament courses, but just professional golf tournaments in general. They have to keep the greens a little bit higher because it's so windy. You can't have the balls rolling all over the place. So because of that, that kind of is an equalizer across the field. If you look at the past winners, you don't necessarily have to be a great putter or be putting even great that week to win. So I think that's something that actually, even though it equalizes the field, that's something that actually gives him a little bit of a boost, given how his putting's been very fickle lately.
Yeah, putting's not the strength that he used to lean on. But again, in any given week, it could be, obviously, with him. He's been known to get hot with the flat stick. Who's your number two guy?
Number two guy, and this is a guy who hasn't done it at all on the major stage, but I think it's time. It's Patrick Reed. Mm. For a guy who's been, the first half of the season was kind of, well, the listen, kind of, there's no bones about it. He wasn't playing well. The last month and a half, he's really turned it on. Not only has he kind of fixed his short game, but if you look at even when Patrick Reed was playing well the past two or 3 years, driving was not necessarily his forte. It was more of kind of just doing it around the greens and making sure that those would-be bogeys stayed pars. And not only is he starting to do that, but he's keeping the ball in the fairway more so than ever, at least in the past five or six tournaments. That's going to be, as you mentioned earlier, it's going to be very key at Birkdale. I know we've hammered him for his no top tens in a major, but he was close last year. He had a T12 and a T13 at the British and PGA. Mm-hmm. So this is a guy who's coming in a little hotter than people know, and at the same time under the radar. For a guy who it seems like the last 3 or 4 years, every major we wonder, would this be the time? He's not getting any pub going into this week. I think he's a guy that has, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets the breakthrough at Birkdale.
Yeah, well, we've had seven straight first-time major champs, so certainly we're on a nice run of that. And he kind of fits that Brooks Koepka mold of, you know, mid-20s guy, very, very good player, great Ryder Cup player, obviously, where it just seems like it's a matter of time before he wins one. So, I don't know if I necessarily agree this is his best tournament to do it, but certainly wouldn't surprise. Now, what would surprise me is, or maybe not actually, is he going to wear those Team USA pants over there, maybe rile the crowd up a bit that we've seen him, you know, the ones from the Ryder Cup that he's been wearing lately?
That might restart the American Revolution. Frankly, I'd be all for it.
Same.
Maybe if he finds himself in a Sunday pairing with Rory, I think that would be the time to bring the old pants out.
That would be great.
That would be it.
Yeah, you're right.
It'd be kind of like, I can see some, or better yet, I can see him going against Rom, and there could be like a Rocky IV type parallel where, you know, at first everyone's cheering against Reed, and then, you know, the temper tensions from Rahm, they haven't exactly, this is, you know, haven't gone to the wayside. I mean, they can see Rahm going a couple, you know, wedge throws or yells at the crowd. All of a sudden, the gallery turns to Reed. Maybe he makes some speech and unites everybody. It's a long shot, but let me dream.
All right. I like it. Well, I'm glad you're kind of picking a little more out there picks, because I'm going with some chalk here again, and that is reigning Masters champ Sergio Garcia. I think everyone always thought that this would be the major that he kind of broke through in. He's had an incredible 10 top 10s in this event. Think about that. 10 top 10s in the British Open or the Open, whatever you want to call it, alone. I mean, that's incredible. There are a lot of very good players who don't have – very, very, very good players who don't have 10 top 10s in all the majors combined. So three straight top sixes in this event. Obviously, we mentioned the Masters win kind of put him over the top. He's got his wedding next week, which is a couple years ago. I had my wedding the week after the Open. I think it's great timing on his part. If he needs any advice, I'm here for him. And, you know, the hole-in-one at the Players, showing up at Wimbledon wearing the green jacket. It's just the year of Sergio. And, again, this is the tournament that is best suited for him, in particular because you mentioned those slow green speeds, which – you know, kind of do neutralize the putting a little for everybody. So with his ball striking, with his ability to play in the wind, I really like Sergio here. I would not be surprised at all if we see him do what Mark O'Meara did here in 1988, which is win the British Open after winning the Masters that same year.
Wow, going the O'Meara parallels. I like it.
Yeah, there you go.
I will say, I am a tad concerned, and this sounds very old sports writer, curmudgeon take, but I do wonder if, and listen, I would do the exact same thing if I was in Sergio's position. The extracurriculars, though, do worry me a little bit.
I knew it.
It seems like there's a lot going on. Not forget the wedding, but just, you know, he's definitely living it up.
He's living it up.
As he should. And I do kind of wonder if not being, I mean, listen, he still wants to win the Claire Jug, obviously.
Yeah.
It's not like he's not putting the time in, but you do just wonder a little bit now that the pressure's taken off. Some people say, well, he'll play a little bit more loose. I wonder, though, if there's more of this, well, you know what, it doesn't matter because I've already conquered the beast, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I can see it.
But again, maybe that's something that's armchair analysis after a bad round, but just all the Sergio we've seen of lately, it just worries me just a tad, that's all.
Okay, fair enough. Let's move on to pick number three.
Three is Alex Noren, and you're seeing a lot of Tommy Fleetwood picks because, yeah, he's from Southport. He's playing really well lately, but Noren's playing just as well. And as we mentioned, you know, guys who are good iron players that can handle the wind, those are two things that Noren fits the bill. If you look at the tournaments he's won, they do have a little bit of parallel to Birkdale in the sense of, yeah, not the longest of venues in places that don't necessarily, require really good short games. But Noren is someone who I think a lot of people picked for the Masters and really didn't do anything. So I think you're not seeing his name as much. People, hey, he got his chance, that he didn't really do it. But this is a guy who's probably been one of the best four or five players if you've looked at just the past year, how he ended 2016, and he's kind of carried that over as well. So I think Noren's someone who you're not going to see on a lot of lists, and honestly, Vegas doesn't have him too highly as well. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the mix there on Saturday and Sunday, and really – again, depending on the weather, that's all you really need. So I think if things go actually a little bit windy or even some rainy, I think that actually helps boost his profile a bit.
Yeah, good point. And, you know, he's been knocked a little because he hasn't done anything to major, but it's such a small sample size so far, especially since he's turned into, you know, the Alex Noren that he is now. I mean, it's really just been the last year. It's actually been post it was the Scottish Open, I guess, last year that really started his run. So it's been 1 year where he's won the five events or whatever, really vaulted up in the world ranking into the top 10. So again, that it's just been a few majors that he's kind of played since he's gained that status. And it's just too small of a sample size to knock him. I agree. He's too good of a player not to show up on a leaderboard at some point, and why not at the Open? My third guy is Adam Scott. And, you know, part of this may be the fact that I still feel bad for him losing in 2012. I was there. It was my first Open that I attended in person, and seeing him bogey those final four holes was just brutal. I mean, it was, you know, obviously now you look back, it's a great way for Ernie Els to kind of cap off his career with a fourth major, but man, that was rough. I mean, it's, you know, statisticians say it's the biggest choke of the last 25 years, at least, that they can go back and crunch all the data. So that was a tough loss for him. Obviously, he got over it by winning the Masters the next year, but he really had 3 years in a row in this event that he could have easily won the Claret Jug. So I just think he's overdue for one. I also did recently have a breakfast with him. I learned that he doesn't like cheese like me. So I do have a soft spot for him, I'll admit. You know, and yes, Joel, he is a good-looking man. I know you've pointed that out before. But again, his track record in the past year, it's been pretty quiet. He obviously won those couple events early last season, then kind of cooled off, came back a little at the FedEx Cup playoffs. This year, nothing great. T6 at the Players is his best tournament, but a lot of top 15s, a lot of top 10s. He did miss the cut at Erin Hills, but, you know, it was a course that no one was familiar with. I just think he gets back on track here, again, at a real ball strikers course. I'm going with Adam Scott, number three. And also, I like the fact that he's 30-1 odds. I think he's great value for that when you compare him to some of the guys, you know, ranked above him, guys like Tommy Fleetwood, who you mentioned, really like Tommy Fleetwood as well, but now everybody likes him, so you kind of have to get off that bandwagon. He's moved all the way up to 20-1 odds, and he's never even contended at a major. So, well, I guess at the U.S. Open, he was T4, but you know what I mean, never seriously down the stretch. So I really like Adam Scott, especially at 30-1 odds.
I think you hit on it that even though he hasn't found the winner's circle, he's been just consistently good in almost every tournament he's competed in.
Right.
And the sense that he doesn't necessarily – he hasn't had just a, oh, man, what's going on with Adam Scott? I think we forget he's still in his prime because he had such success early on in his career. I think we think Scott's in his late 30s, early 40s. I mean, he's, what, 35, 36?
Yeah, 36, 37.
36.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously still extremely, extremely good shape. I gotta be honest. I'm surprised he hasn't called Bernard Langer up and, you know, try to figure out this anchoring that apparently he's not anchoring.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you talk about a guy. Him and Keegan need to give those guys a call and figure out what they're doing. But I know I'm with you, Scott. Again, I hate to sound like a broken record, but my God, the guy puts on a clinic with his irons. Really, his weak spot has been putting. As we've mentioned, these greens aren't that, even by open standards, are not that tough. They're really not that undulated. Mm-hmm. So. This course seems built for him. Those odds. If you're looking for, I mean, I guess they don't technically qualify as a sleeper, but if you're just looking just for a smart investment, I think Scott, you definitely got to circle him as one of the two or three best bets.
Yeah. And, you know, that's Bernard Langer, that's funny because, you know, it caused a bit of a controversy, but can you imagine if it was a PGA Tour player, let alone a star like Adam Scott doing that? I don't know if you could get away with it. I think there'd just be too much. You'd have to deal with so many questions week in, week out. But yeah, you're right. Langer has gotten around it. And you know, Scott admits it. He says that he wonders about how the anchor ban affected his career and what his career could have been, because he was really rolling when it came into effect, but when they announced it and it just got in his mind. I mean, that was when he had really finally established himself as a force in these major championships. Obviously, we mentioned the close calls at the British Open, but the win at the Masters, some other nice high finishes. He was really kind of getting in the groove of contending at every major almost. And once that happened, he really hasn't. So he's got to be thinking, man, if it weren't for that ban, who knows? I could have 2, 3, 4 majors by now. But anyway.
I will say in his defense, his putting hasn't been as bad this year as it has been the past 3 or 4.
No, he's figured it out a little. You're right. He has. He has. So, but still, it's probably, you know how it is. It's all confidence with these guys. And and that just gets exacerbated, obviously, when you get to a major championship and just you're thinking about every single stroke out there. Who's your fourth guy?
So my last guy is, this is definitely a sleeper pick, and not coming with a lot of confidence, and he's got a little bit off-course drama to deal with. But all that said, if you're looking for the storyline of all storylines, I think it's Lee Westwood finally comes through and gets the major championship.
Wow.
for those unfamiliar, Westwood did split with his agent, Chubby Chandler, which I believe was over 25 yep. years, I think, they were together. So I am a little worried that especially the British tabloids could take a hold of that, and you'll have to answer a little bit to that. But the easiest way to put that in the back burner is let your play do the talking. And Westwood's a guy who's been so close to the tournament in years past. I think he's got four top fives here. Played okay last year, hit a T22 at Troon. And really, he was kind of one of those guys that got kind of screwed on the Thursday-Friday weather. So, again, a lot of luck's involved. But Westwood, he's had a pretty good year, actually. I think people, he kind of got dogged a little bit for his performance at the Ryder Cup at Hazeltine. But really, since then, is coming into form. His drives are as good as they've ever been. And again, if you look at least the limited play he's had, not all the European, it's funny. If you look at the statistics, European Tour, it's very, it's a very bizarre. Some of the tournaments that are outside of Europe, the statistics kind of come in shaky, but the ones that we can kind of track, he's played really well this year on the second shot. So Westwood's the guy who no one is talking about, but he does have the track record and has done it pretty well, at least recently as well. So definitely a dark horse, but you always need to pick one sleeper. Mine's Lee Westwood.
All right. Well, speaking of guys who are coming off 25-year-plus breakups, I kind of like Phil Mickelson, not going to lie. I think, you know, it's funny, we've been talking about his winless drought. It's now 4 years, but of course, his last win did come at the Open, at Muirfield, not at Birkdale, obviously, but at the Open. You know, I think this course will take the driver out of his hand. I think that will help him. His iron play has been spectacular this year. He ranks fifth on tour in strokes gained approach to the green. So no issues there. You know, the putter's not great anymore, but again, this is the tournament that kind of neutralizes it. And, you know, he's getting up there. He's 47 years old. But again, we've been talking about this already. Old guys can play well at the Open. So I'm liking Phil. You know, I could see the whole Bones covering him final round as an on-course reporter for NBC while Phil plays in the final group. I don't know why. For some reason, I just feel like that's going to happen. There's going to be some sort of drama there. Not that there will be any, you know, animosity between the two, but just kind of this weird thing that you have Bones out there with Phil but not carrying his bag. Obviously, Phil's brother, Tim, will be doing that. But I don't know. I just you talk about Westwood with the great storyline. I think we all look for kind of some of these great storylines to come to fruition. I just think it'd be tough to find a better storyline than Phil Mickelson contending and possibly winning a second Claret Jug.
Hopefully, if that does happen, Bones is a little bit more magnanimous than someone like Mark Jackson, who covers the Warriors after getting fired. Those have been the toughest watches the past couple of years.
Yeah.
It's been brutal. But no, in terms of Phil, I think he's got two things going for him. As you mentioned, the driving, if you look at really this year, where has Phil gone wrong? It's the wayward drives, which, you know, he's never been an accurate guy throughout his career, but this year especially, he's been all over the map. It seems like at least once a round, we have some crazy video of him hitting in a place where it was like it was even past the galleries. That being said, if you look at not only last year at Troon, but at Muirfield when he hit his open win, he doesn't hit the driver much. So if he's hitting 3-wood or even an iron, all of a sudden, I think that does help his profile a little bit. As we mentioned earlier, too, Phil's not exactly the best putter. He can get hot, but where he really struggles is he gets a little bit too aggressive, and it costs him all of a sudden. He has a 3-putt from he turns a 20-foot birdie putt into a 3-putt. You can be a little bit more aggressive though on these greens and not be penalized. So I think that helps in Phil's corner as well. So it's funny. I think when we hear someone like Rahm, and we're hearing the Rorys and we're hearing the DJ, I think Phil actually almost has just as good, if not a better chance, at least in terms of style of play, as any of those guys.
I'm glad you mentioned DJ and Rory. We got to mention them. Neither of us picked him, obviously, in our top four. Why did that happen? Explain it to us, Joel.
I got to be honest. For me, it's for Rory. What have we seen, really, the past, you know, four or five? His past four tournaments, he's been all over the place. He played well at the Travelers Championship on Sunday, but the first 3 days, he, you know, just has no conviction, it seems like. The short game is the one with all of the different, you know, putting. Putter switches, but really his iron play has not been that great either. I think it might be a little bit too early to chalk that up to he's having issues with the equipment assimilation. I think it just might be struggling with the swing a little bit. And I think that has to kind of correlate to the issues he's had with his rib and back. I think it's not just him, but anyone who's had that injury would really struggle to kind of really come down on it, and you'd be apprehensive too. For me, even though he is back to full health, I think we saw at the Irish Open just last week, he didn't, he was nowhere close to competing. He is playing the Scottish Open. I think if he does like a top 15, top 20, we can reevaluate it. But for a guy who's a top five player in the world, he certainly isn't playing like it really since Augusta. DJ, yeah, it's since the injury, he hasn't, it's definitely slowed him down for what he did the first half of the season. Granted, that was bound to happen anyway. And this, any course, DJ, if he's on his A game, you're not going to bet against him. But I just don't know if he has his A game at the moment. And for his odds, man, I don't like, he's not exactly coming in hot. I don't think, the last I saw, he was at 10-1. That's something I would not put money down on that by any means.
Yeah, and back to Rory, just to show how far he's fallen. I know you in our league floated that he's available on the trading block, and we didn't get one sniff of an offer. So people aren't exactly clamoring for him right now. I mean, we've all seen the video of him on the practice green trying out five putters before a competitive round. I mean, on the PGA Tour, it's just kind of crazy. The mental stuff that's going on right now with him and the putter and everything else. But can you imagine? I mean, Rory McIlroy is on the trading block and guys aren't even interested in him. So
now here is a big caveat, though, I will say. 2014, when Rory won, he didn't play well at the Irish Open either. I think he missed the cut. I think then he came back the next week at the Scottish Open and had like a T13 or T14. So depending on how he does this week, I think maybe we can revisit this, right before the tournament starts. But unless something miraculous happens this week, he's a guy I think is on the outside looking in.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with him in the Irish Open. I mean, he's played five times, he's missed the cut four times, and he won the other time. So yeah, I'm not looking too much in that. I'm looking more at the five putters on the practice green and the perfect drive after perfect drive that he seems to squander. Either with a bad, sloppy wedge play or missing a close putt. So, again, yeah, neither of us have those guys in our top four. I just want to mention a few other guys, and maybe you want to mention someone else as well. But starting with Ricky Fowler, neither of us picked him. But, again, we talk about guys who are closing in on breaking through for the first major. This was kind of the first major that he sort of played well at. He's a very good wind player. He's had a great season. Really hasn't gotten the results that you would even think from his stats. Only the one win at the Honda. Obviously, he was in contention at the U.S. Open. Came up short on Sunday. I think he's close to winning that first major, and I could see him doing it at an Open. Another guy that I wanted to mention is Ian Poulter. Ian Poulter was runner-up here back in 2008. It was a little bit of a backdoor runner-up, but whatever. It was a runner-up. I believe his best finish at a major ever at this course, obviously, at Royal Birkdale. Needed to get into the field through a qualifier, did so easily. And surprisingly enough, he ranks number sixth on tour this year in strokes gained approach to the green. So his iron play is as sharp as it's ever been in his career. So I like Ian Poulter a lot as a dark horse here, and he's 60-80-1 depending on where you're looking. So again, good value there as an actual sleeper pick. And finally, I know this is going to become a running joke with you, Joel, but Bill Haas. I mean, come on, he's listed 125-1 of all the guys who are listed. I'd say 80-1 or lower. I like his chances the best. He finally got that first top 10 at a major at the Open last year, T9 at Royal Troon. And he's coming off a T5 at the U.S. Open. So, like Patrick Reed, he's kind of had this hang-up of winning regular events but not playing well at the majors. Maybe he's finally gotten over that. I kind of like him this week. And again, since it's not a bomber's course, focusing more on positioning and irons and, neutralizing the putter a little. I think Bill Haas, especially at 125-1, is a nice pick. Okay, I'll let you rip me.
I think at this point, if Haas ever does win, he might be one of the first people he thanks. Just like, you know what? Alex Myers, he's the only one I've ever really believed in.
That's right.
Really, outside his dad, you might be number two.
Might be number two.
Just for that prospect, I like it. obviously Haas did have the nice finish last year. I mean, he's playing well, so I'm not going to tell you rip you for that pick. You mentioned Fowler. I think this will be a really interesting testament to his character and fortitude because he got ripped pretty hard for his Sunday performance. Not necessarily the way he played, but his reaction to it. I think a little bit of that, and you know, I know we definitely had some pieces on our site that took a hard stance as well, but I think the media in general was a little bit too hard on him. He's not a guy who, you know, is going to, after his round, knock himself. But you could, if you watched him actually during the tournament, he was visibly frustrated. I don't think he was happy by any means with the way he finished. But at the same time, he's not a guy who's going to act up after a round. I think we misconstrued that a little bit. As you mentioned, he is playing extremely well. Even at Erin Hills, yeah, he didn't score well. He wasn't that far off. He didn't make a lot of putts, but it was more just his irons weren't putting him in spots to really convert. So I think it'll be really interesting to see how he bounces back from that. Another top guy we haven't mentioned, I feel like he gets mentioned in every major, and the fact that he hasn't really done it in the past few has maybe cooled us a little bit, but Hideki Matsuyama, again, if we're talking iron players, that's a guy that's got to be listed. If you remember, just a couple years ago, right before that wacky weather delay, Matsuyama was one of the hottest players at St. Andrews. He shows he can, do it at this venue, and he, in the past, has done it at majors. Again, I think the thing that really helps him here is that, if we're talking issues with putting with Rory and Spieth, those are nowhere near the plate that Hideki has. The guy has been totally lost this year on the greens. But, again, if he's looking for anything to kind of spur him, I think someone like Royal Birkdale actually fits his game really well. So, I don't necessarily like his odds in the sense that they're still kind of high. A lot of that is with the overseas action. That said, I think Matsuyama is one of the six or seven guys you need to watch this week.
All right. Well, I think that's probably going to wrap it up. I'm really excited to get over there, especially to get into some of those betting parlors. Joel, let me know if you want me to put a few pounds on anyone in particular, because it's totally legal over there, which is fantastic. And Joel, again, be safe out there on the road. Watch out for deer, watch out for cops, and everything else.
Hey, you be safe over in the UK too. It's international climate right now. It's kind of iffy. I don't need you starting any incidents. So especially if there's a wild Bill Haas victory celebration.
Ooh,
so
yeah.
Make sure you come back in one piece.
That's right. Riots in the street in Southport. I'll be leading, but I will do that. I will keep my head down. I will work hard. I will eat a lot of junk food and again place a few bets at the betting parlor. So anyway, guys, thanks for listening. Good luck in all your fantasy and betting endeavors as well. Enjoy the Open Championship at Royal Birkdale. Please subscribe to us on iTunes if you haven't done so already, and check back next week where we wrap it all up, make fun of our picks, and look ahead at the next tournament.